This week on Art in the Air features landscape photographer, professor, and fine arts department chair at Indiana University South Bend, Susan L. Moore, whose work includes landscapes of Indiana and large cities in Europe. Next, Bergerine vocalist and pianist from South Bend, Molly Abraham, shares her musical journey. Our spotlights on Memorial Opera House's November and December events, including a production of Scrooge.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Memorial Opera House, the events coordinator. She's been with us several times and can always keep us up to date on what's going on there. Adrienne Bensimer, thank you so much for coming back on the show and telling us all about what's happened and what's happening.
Thank you. What has happened is we are back in action. Construction is basically wrapping all up. We are back in the theater. We just had an amazing run of Young Frankenstein, basically a sold out show every week, every night. So it was amazing to be able to welcome people back into our space again. So it's great to be back home for sure. And that being said, we have a ton of stuff on the calendar for now to the end of the year. We have the Ultimate Doors Tribute Band coming in November 9th. So basically, if you're a Doors fan or any form of Jim Morrison, come out, catch the show. It's a great concert. Then we have our Veterans Day event with South Shore Orchestra. So they'll do a symphonic tribute all through, you know, military history and military songs to support our veterans and to say thank you. So there's always some little surprises during that show as well. So some guest acts, some guest speakers. So we always look forward to that. That's such a great day. And then we will be rolling out into our Christmas show, Scrooge. So they're already actively practicing and getting ready. The set's already in the process of being built. So Scrooge the musical is definitely the one for this winter to come and see.
Yeah, it opens November 29th and goes through December 15th. So that's how that one runs. And back, one thing I noticed on for your Veterans Day concert, and what's surprising is the movie is a comedy, 1941. John Williams wrote the Grand March, and yet the march is very traditional as far as a military march. That's one of their pieces they've selected for that concert.
Yeah, absolutely. They always do a really good job of doing their research and picking some great pieces.
Yeah, and it's a great title, Salute to Our Heroes. It's a really strong title.
Yeah, for sure.
So are you also the Holly Jolly Jamboree? That's, you know, don't we all want to meet Cindy Lou Who?
We do, yeah. Holly Jolly Jamboree. Santa Claus will be here doing some visits this year. He's making his way through town and popping in. So he'll be here to, you know, listen to
Cindy Lou Who's best friend, the Grinch.
He may. I don't know. We don't really know who's all going to be here yet, but I'm hoping that the Grinch and Cindy Lou Who will both be here. So
I hope so.
And then we're getting ready to start rehearsals for our Penguin Players Cabaret, which is actually, it's a division of our Penguin Project. that is for adults with all abilities that are going to get to do a cabaret type style show. And we're actually still looking for some help with that, but that's going to be a great fun night. I actually get to be one of the mentors for that show.
Oh,
so I'm super excited.
Adrian, what type of help are you looking for?
They're looking for mentors. So anybody that's willing to sing, act, dance, just to help their penguin player to be more comfortable with the stage. So they can go to our website. There's a ton more information about our penguin players. And like I said, that's the adult, basically the adult version of our penguin project. So we opened it up to all ages now. And like I said, we're doing Hollywood through the ages. So there's going to be a lot of fun songs. I can't disclose what they all are yet because we haven't even started rehearsing. But yeah, that's going to be a great fun show as well.
Fabulous.
And how do you wrap up December? You have something that's a tradition every year with the South Shore Orchestra.
Yeah, we have our South Shore Orchestra Holiday Pops. We're actually going to do two shows this year. That sells out every year, and people are actually upset when they can't get tickets. So this year, we decided that on Sunday, December 22nd, we are going to do a 2 p.m. show, so a 2 p.m. matinee, and then we will also be doing a 7:30 show. So two shows to see in the same day, and that's, you know, our traditional Christmas music, sing-along. Santa again will be making an appearance, and again, some other special surprises that day. So yeah, that's a great fun time to get ready to start that Christmas week, come out before all the family gets in town and come sing some Christmas songs. And there may be some warm cocktails and hot apple cider and hot cocoa available too.
So. In your new bar space that is there. It's a beautiful place. And as you enter, it's a completely different experience entering the Memorial Opera House. Now it's not that crowded little dingy thing. It's wide open and bright and everything.
It is. It's amazing. It's been very fun to be able to watch and see the looks on people's faces when they come in and they're like, "Whoa, it looks so much bigger," even though we didn't add any more space, just moving some stuff around and definitely making some lighting changes and some moving some features around has definitely made this space a lot more open and more friendly and more welcoming.
Well, we have time for you to briefly preview this upcoming season in the next year. So tell us just kind of quickly what shows you have lined up in terms of theater shows. We'll go into detail on that later on in the next interview.
Well, first concert of the year is our ever famous Mega Beatles, like we always do. That's always the one that we start the year with. And then we will run it and start into musical season. And this year we are doing Singing in the Rain. We have Forever Plaid, the Rocky Horror Show. And then we are going to end next year out with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So we have a lot of fun shows, and there's a lot of concerts on the books coming as well. So lots of fun things.
Which we'll revisit in the future interviews. In our last minute here, why don't you go back over the dates real quick for what's happening in the fall?
Absolutely. Ultimate Doors on November 9th, Ultimate Doors Tribute Band. Veterans Day event on Veterans Day with South Shore Orchestra. And then we will start Scrooge November 29th through December 15th. And South Shore Orchestra again for the Holiday Pops.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate you coming on our earlier spotlight. Adrian Bansomer, who is the events coordinator and also in charge of a lot of things. And now she turned her hair blonde. And so blondes have more fun. And you can get tickets at memorialoperahouse.com. You can email them at tickets@memorialoperahouse.com. Call them at 219-548-9137. And of course, Memorial Opera House, newly renovated, located at 104 Indiana Avenue, Valparaiso, Indiana. Adrian, thank you so much for coming on and sharing what's going on at Memorial Opera House. And we'll have you back to talk about the more detail for the next year.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hi, this is Alan Harrison, author of Scene Change and Scene Change 2. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Susan L. Moore to Art on the Air. Susan is a landscape photographer and has made photographs all over the United States and Europe. In landscape, she seeks to find a unique point of view. She selects different processes and cameras to create her work, making contemporary landscape images. Her work includes large color landscapes of Indiana, gelatin silver prints of large cities in Europe, and everything in between. She has exhibited nationally and internationally. Currently, Susan is professor and chair of the Fine Arts Department at Indiana University South Bend, where she teaches photography and serves as the chair of the Fine Arts Department. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Susan. It's really nice seeing you again.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction.
We have everything we want to know about Susan. We're afraid to ask. But what I'm going to ask is your origin story about your background. I always like to put it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Susan.
Well, I grew up in Chicago. I still love Chicago. It's such a great city. And my parents, my dad was a hobbyist photographer. And like so many people, he gave me my first camera when I think probably early teens, even tweens. And I just really fell in love with the camera. It really allowed me to do all kinds of things that I couldn't do without it. And my family were very indoorsy kinds of people. They were very much read a book and learn from that kind of activity. And I have always been kind of an outdoorsy, in the woods, at the lake, at the beach kind of a person. And so the camera really gave me an excuse to kind of go out by myself and look for photographs. And I fell in love with photography from an early age. And then in high school, I had an excellent, excellent photography teacher. I still remember things that she taught me. And she really encouraged me to keep going in photography. Yeah, I did the yearbook, did the school newspaper, all those kinds of things, and then just never stopped.
So after high school, you knew that photography was the passion you wanted to pursue?
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to go to art school from a young age, and like parents everywhere, art school, what are you doing? but I got good grades, and they eventually came around to my side of studying art. Yeah.
So did your father go out and shoot photos with you? What was your early childhood like, and what kind of art education? So you said you had the camera, like, I don't know, 12, maybe 11, 12, right in there.
Yeah.
So what was your creative elementary school like? And then I'm just sort of interested in the whole childhood experience.
Oh my. I had a pretty good education, and we had art when I was growing up in school, although I was never really super good at drawing and painting. And so the photography, of course, allows a person to make images, and it's seductively easy until you really get deep into it. And then you realize, wow, this is just hard in a different way.
Right.
And my dad always encouraged my artistic endeavors, although I don't know that he went out and photographed with me. He, you know, he had a job.
Yeah. It's interesting how, you know, the photographer develops his eye, and why you can look at two images and you're attracted to one, and they're similar, but they're not quite the same. And one has it and the other, you know, doesn't quite reach you. So it's a hard process to.
Sure.
So in that beginning, were you doing your own developing of the film?
I don't think so. I think I started developing film in high school. In high school, we had a dark room, and we worked in black and white. Mm-hmm. And then I'm old enough that I learned black and white photography through high school and college. And digital didn't really come around until I was already in the field working.
You know, I'm curious about what that first camera was, and then maybe even discuss after you went through the film era, the switch to digital, and how that influenced your photography going from film. Or do you still work in film occasionally?
So I'm one of these people, if I buy a piece of equipment, I'm making a lifetime commitment to it. And it's unusual for me to give something away. The very first camera I had was a Ricoh camera, and it made it landed on the floor one day and it was very sad. And so then I moved to a Pentax K1000, right, which was a very popular camera at that time. And I don't still have that camera, but I used it for a long time. And then when I got to college, I knew that all the cool kids at college had had Nikon F4 cameras. And this is the camera I need. And my parents reluctantly agreed to my newfound camera addiction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, out there, you know, I'm a Canon shooter, so I know that I always tease people about that. And, of course, the quick story I like to say about that is when Canon went to the CMOS sensor that actually Olympus developed, and everyone was using a CCD sensor at that point, a whole bunch of pros jumped to Canon at that point. Now everyone's caught up and everything, but Canon is a much bigger company. Of course, both of them need to watch out for Sony, because Sony has got a huge corporation. So you're now you're still shooting with then Nikon equipment?
Yes, I like Nikon. I think it all has to do with your index finger and your thumb, and you train your fingers to do very specific skills and to work the menus. I actually, you know, like you said, there's not a huge difference in terms of the quality between the different formats now. It's really what you're comfortable with. But I have a new mirrorless Nikon camera, and my digital cameras, of course, they become paperweights and they go to students. But my old film cameras, I still shoot with my old film cameras, and I have a 4x5, I have a 5x7. I don't have an 8x10.
Yeah, that's a lot to haul around, that's for sure.
Yes. I have friends who still shoot 8x10 film. Yeah. It's just more than, it's a time commitment, yeah. Right.
And keep good exercise to carrying that thing around all the time. But yeah, I know what you mean. And so you answered one question I was going to ask about going to mirrorless. And I think that's really the trend. And I've had such a huge investment. I think I'm going to stay with my mirror cameras, the DSLRs, but everything. Well, let's talk more about your work, the things you like to shoot, first of all. It says in your biography about landscapes, but, you know, I was looking at your things. Not everything's a landscape. You have some, like, travel things and a whole black and white series. So talk about what inspires you to shoot and some of the work that you already have done.
So for landscape photography, I think about there was a writer, his name was J.B. Jackson, and he wrote about the landscape as a view. And he talked about using the view camera and looking at what's presented in front of you as a photographer and selecting your composition and your design behind the lens of the camera. So I take this definition of landscape, this very kind of broad definition of landscape, and then fit my ideas inside of it. And so sometimes I'm in a city, Paris, wonderful city to photograph in, Milan, and I'm photographing, but I'm still thinking of those images in terms of a landscape, even if there are people or buses or other things in the view. A lot of the contemporary work I'm doing right now, I set up, For lack of a better word, I would use the word diorama. Although to me, a diorama implies a lot of things, and my dioramas are extremely minimalist. But I am creating scenes, creating landscapes in the studio, and then photographing them.
I think you're referencing like fictional spaces, maybe in particular. Yes. I find that work like mysterious and comforting at the same time. I just am so intrigued by it. It just is like what's around the corner and the shadow. I mean, it's just so beautiful and evocative.
Oh, thank you. That's the intention, to be a kind of metaphor for a mental experience or an idea or a thoughtful moment.
Yeah.
And your disjointed travelogue also, that's very interesting. It's kind of a different way to do that and everything in the light and shadow, some of your spaces like that. Now, do you have a preference of working in color on black and white? I know there's a lot of black and white, but there is some color, but do you have a preference? I mean, you did an early black and white study in college, but.
So I tend to work in series, and all of the work is related together in a larger concept of understanding photography and landscape. But I will work on a series for a period of time. And then when I feel like, well, this work is really good, but it's kind of done, I can't add more content to it, I will totally change the technology that I'm using in order to kind of force my brain to think in a different way and think creatively and come up with a new project. So I had been working in color film, and then I switched to black and white film, and then I switched to digital with the fictional space series, because that work was done in a residency in New York City, and I needed the digital to make it happen within the time frame of the residency. And then the next residency, I switched back to color to kind of keep my brain working and moving forward.
Paper Cranes was a COVID project.
That was so, my COVID project.
Yeah, it was so interesting. I love that you used like your note paper. And so what inspired you doing Paper Cranes?
I've always loved origami.
Yeah.
It's just... I like folding paper.
They say it's a very, what do they say? Because it used to be for like the royalty, and it was a beautiful pastime for princesses to, you know, fold this paper. I remember reading, you know, a long time ago.
I didn't know that. But when I was on a Zoom call, and there were so many Zoom calls, I would fold paper under the table to keep my hands occupied and to stay alert. And I just started collecting them. And then I started photographing them. And then once you start photographing them, they become infinite in a way, because they're reproducible digitally. And I really enjoyed the paper cranes. But then I also, when we started to come out of social distancing, they kind of fell away, because that was my COVID project.
Right, right. You even folded yourself into a paper crane.
I did.
So in the digital photography world, what's your post-processing look like? What tools do you use?
I use Lightroom almost exclusively. I learned about Lightroom One, and it just makes sense. Of course, now Adobe and Lightroom are the same software, just kind of different entry points.
Right.
But I like the way Lightroom organizes and also edits. And I don't make a lot of editing that one would need Photoshop for. And Lightroom, you know, is designed for photographers and respects the metaphor of the negative and the non-destructive editing. Right. And so there's a lot of really cool things about Lightroom. And I feel like it was designed for people just like me.
Right.
So, Susan, I want to talk about your international education program. Do you, Florence is a beautiful choice, but is that where you go each time, is to Florence, or have you switched cities?
So I can talk about Florence. Oh, I love Florence.
I know, please. I know, Venice, it's like Venice for me too. I just like, oh my gosh, I melt in Venice.
Yes, it's quite lovely. Mm-hmm. So I went to graduate school at Washington University in St. Louis, and my photography instructor there, his name is Stan Strombecki, and he takes students to Florence, Italy, for many years, and he helped me to establish the program from IUSB to take students to Florence, Italy. And we partner with a school in Florence called the Santa Reparata International School of Art. And the folks that run that program are their family was originally from Texas. So they are, the woman who runs it is from the United States, although I think she probably is mostly Italian now. But they speak English and Italian, and they have a school with all the things that you would want a school to have, like a computer lab and a classroom and a library, and they do all the groundwork. So it makes it really wonderful for faculty like me to just arrive in Florence with a group of students and everything is ready to go. And Florence is such a magical place for students. Mm-hmm. And it's such a small and perfect city. You can walk across it in just a few hours. And of course, Michelangelo's David is there, which is the most so spectacular. And we also go to Venice and Siena and Lucca and Pisa and all different kinds of places like that.
So you're a professor of photography also. Tell me about that, taking incoming students, because obviously if they're taking, now obviously you probably have some students that you take a beginning photography class that aren't really photographers, but everyone nowadays think, hey, I'm a photographer because I got a camera phone, and camera phones are pretty good. But tell us about what your teaching process is. How do you take someone, say, to develop the eye to shoot whatever they're going to shoot for their subject?
Yeah, photography. So I teach photography, and there aren't a lot of photography majors nationwide anymore, like you said, because of the cell phone. Although, and of course, AI is changing photography again, and I do not have enough skills to talk adequately on that. But so the students learn photography in terms of the DSLR or the mirrorless camera, in terms of aperture and shutter speed. And of course, they can change their ISO. So we learn technical things. And then we also learn the formal qualities of art, line, shape, pattern, design, and those kinds of things. And then they also learn about time and distortion of space and quality of light and things that make photography unique and interesting. And composition is in that list too. Graphic design is probably our biggest major here at IU South Bend. And so everyone, I tell people this all the time, everyone in School of the Arts is learning about graphic design. So photography is part of graphic design.
Oh, sure. That makes total sense. And you know, obviously you have to learn the tools of photography. But there are a lot of photographers, my wife is one of these, who doesn't really understand the triangle of, you know, exposure, aperture, and everything. But she'll want to do something like, and said, well, I want this to be focused. I said, well, honey, you need to understand aperture. Oh, I don't do that. And she has an incredible eye. Well, you talked earlier about going out and if you went shooting, we a lot of times go out shooting together and we come up with different things. We a lot of times shoot the same thing, but I remember we went out west once and I was shooting this grand canyon and wide shots and everything, kind of panoramic views. She comes up with this one with the tree is in it as a subject and with that as a background. So we have different comps. So that's interesting how you learn. One of the things I always tell people when they want to take better pictures, I says, envision it as a photo that you can hold. I said, you go through that viewfinder, you get kind of excited. Think about what the end product would look like if you had an actual printed picture and everything.
Sure. I think that photography is really hard, I think also because of the emotions, right? So if you have, if you're someplace, even someplace local like Lake Michigan, and it's sunset and you're there with a special person and it's so beautiful and you take a picture of that, and it's hard to capture the things that are in your heart in a picture. And that's what a trained photographer learns how to do, how to really, through experience and through talking to people, to capture emotions and ideas. But if you're a photographer, if your photographs serve your purpose, if you're at a birthday party or you're at a concert and you have a picture that helps you remember that event, then it's a wonderful picture.
Right. Sure. The whole purpose is that capturing that moment in time. So referencing kind of what you just said, how do your series come about? Do you start out with, I want to do a particular thing? Or do you have a photograph that you take that inspires the series? It probably goes both ways, but
So the trick to being a creative photographer is to carry your camera with you all the time and to look back at those photographs. And so when you look back at your camera roll or another way of editing your images, you look for not the picture that looks like every other picture, but the different picture. Mm-hmm. And the picture that's different and what is behind that picture, what emotions are in that picture, what design or ideas in that picture, and the picture that's different, that's the one that you follow.
Yeah.
Do you ever go out shooting things unplanned? I mean, it sounds like you might. Sometimes, instead of going on, I'm going to go out and shoot this particular landscape at this particular time, you say, oh man, this just popped up in my thing. And you do that kind of potpourri of photography. Oh yeah, here's something to shoot, and stop and shoot it.
So sometimes I do have planned day trips specifically out to photograph and just to be creative and reconnect with the camera. And then other times, one of the reasons I work in the studio now is that you can really target your time and not be weather dependent or things like that. It's a little bit more strategic, but a little bit of both.
Right.
In high school, I was totally immersed in photography. I mean, it was just like everything to me. And being that teenager, having that camera, I had a Minolta 101, sort of gave me entry into places that, and acceptance in places that normally I wouldn't have been comfortable like being in, I guess, but the camera was like the introduction.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it was that way for you when you were younger. It just
absolutely. Still today. It gives you an excuse to go places and meet people and do things that you couldn't do. Right. Absolutely.
Well, Susan, in our final moments here, could you tell us how people can find you online, how to get in touch with you? And if they're interested in attending courses at IU South Bend in the arts department, tell us a little bit about that real quick.
Sure. So my website is slmoore.com, SusanLMoore.com. And I'm at IUSB. And if you're interested in taking a photography class as an adult or as a student seeking a degree, I would just go to iusb.com or .edu and look us up and be happy to chat with you.
Well, Susan, this has been a real pleasure being a photographer myself, and appreciate you coming on. Are there, that's Susan L. Moore. You can see her website at slmoore.com and also get in touch with her there. Thank you so much for sharing your arts and photography journey on Art on the Air.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Coach Kiki, Keela Parkinson of Kiki Productions, Inc. Communications Coaching and the host of Tune In, Radio for Your Mind, Body, and Soul. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Molly Abraham to Art on the Air. Molly grew up in a household of musicians, but her first passion was hockey. She is a self-taught vocalist and pianist playing at many South Bend venues. During COVID, she refined her skills and started playing out in bands and duos. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Molly. It's very nice meeting you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We love having you on the show. And we kind of want our, as you know, with all of our audiences, we want to know your origin story. I always tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Molly.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting story. I actually started out in Michigan. I was born in Warren, Michigan, and I grew up in Sterling Heights, Michigan. And my dad was a piano player. And I begged him for piano lessons. And my mom was a singer in a nationally ranked choir. And she worked with me a lot on my singing, but I still wanted singing lessons. But at that point, my number one passion and hobby was hockey. And because of that, we just didn't really have the funding or the time to get me to singing and piano lessons. So I was self-taught with singing my whole life. I did a lot of elementary school talent shows, middle school talent shows, high school talent shows. And then I got to college and I taught myself piano. I ended up going NCAA Division III. I played hockey out in Minnesota. And it wasn't exactly my dream to be a Division III hockey player. I thought I was going to be in the Olympics, and I thought I was going to be in the NHL, and it didn't really work out that way. And I was still really devoted to hockey, but then I had more time to pursue music. So I started teaching myself to play piano. I did some more shows in college. And then I graduated, and I was actually dating someone at the time who lived in Michigan City. So I moved out there, and it didn't work out. long story short. And while I was in Michigan City, I started playing in some bands and some duos. And over COVID, I had an opportunity to really hone in on my piano skills, which was great. COVID, I know, was not a great time for everyone, so I never want to make light of it, but it was a very easy time for me. I had my sister over for a month to get her away from Michigan, because Michigan was a lot worse off than Indiana with COVID, and we hung out the whole time. I learned how to cook as well, did a lot more cooking. And once we were done with COVID, I felt like I was pretty much at a point where I'd be comfortable performing a whole set by myself, but I wasn't quite ready to pursue being on stage by myself and asking venues if they're interested. I was really caught up with teaching math, so I'm a math teacher as well. But my now current partner, Brian, found out that there was a last-minute cancellation at LaSalle Kitchen and Tavern at South Bend, and he says, hey, we need somebody for a performance. And I was like, when? And he was like, tonight. And I was like, great.
No chance to think about it. You just do it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't. I just said yes. But at the same time, I was very nervous because I didn't think it would happen that quickly. So I packed up all the stuff I had to perform with, which wasn't much. And I went and played a 50-set song list. And the rest is history, basically. I started getting more and more interest from other venues. And then Hometown Living, WSBT's Hometown Living, had me on their TV news show. And that helped a lot with booking more venues. And then now I have quite a few venues that I regularly play at. And I enjoy it a lot. It's a huge outlet for me. It's definitely very helpful for me with my emotional, social, just processing things. So it's been very helpful to me.
Are you also a songwriter?
Yes, I'm also a songwriter. I wish I have wrote more songs by now. It's very hard for me to write lyrics. They come to me in very emotional points in my life. So when I'm experiencing great emotion, I can just have lyrics flow out of me like it's nothing. But when I just put myself somewhere and try to write something, it never comes out the way that I want it to.
So a typical set, what do you do? What kind of, and we'll talk more about your originals, we'll plan and we're going to play one. What would we hear if we came to see a typical set?
I play anything from 70s to today. I'm a huge fan of the 70s myself. That's where my heart lies. So some things that I do are 25 or 624 by Chicago. I play Dream a Little Dream of Me by the Mamas and Papas. That's dabbling a little bit more in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 60s is where my knowledge drops off. Although I do have a little bit of 60s. I'm working on that. I also really like the 60s. It's just not something I'm as familiar with. I have all the way as recent as Chapel Roan, who just won an award on the VMAs.
Right.
And I do her song Pink Pony Club. And I also have 90s, like Ironic by Alanis Morissette, No Rain by Blind Melon, and some 80s, like Maniac by Michael Cimbello has always been one of my favorite songs. And I figured out a way to cover it on the piano, which was fun.
What music? Now, when you do that, do you do all vocals with it or do you do some instrumental?
I am a pianist and a vocalist, so I am doing the piano and the vocals the entire show. So there aren't really any songs I just do vocals on.
Okay. Currently. And recently I saw, and this is actually how we got connected, you did a set with Marco Villarreal. So tell us about how you got hooked up with Marco.
Yeah, so Marco performed at a winery I used to work at. And so when I started playing more frequently on my own, he would just be like, hey, do you want to come play and sing a little bit on my set? We never got to the point where I was playing piano and while he was playing guitar, but I would just come in for a set or two and sing while he played guitar. And that was super fun for me because Marco is incredibly talented and he plays in very interesting ways the way he plays the chords. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he's so great at Spanish guitar that some of the ways that he plays things comes off a little bit differently than the original. And it always inspires me to do some fun, interesting things with my voice. So he really encourages me to be creative just by the way that he plays. And I really enjoy the opportunities that I get to play with someone as talented as him. And you said he was on the show as well, right?
He's been on the show several times, and I've also used him to do live performance for the Chestnut Arts Center Gala, and I think we've had him for 3 or 4 years at the art fair. So, yeah, we know Marco really well. So,
amazing. He's good people.
Yes, he is. Let's talk a little bit about back to your songwriting, and then, of course, we want to set up your first song, I'm Not Ready, and we'll take a listen to it. But tell us a little bit about the origin of that song and everything.
Yeah, so the origin of the song I'm Not Ready, it was the only song I've ever wrote the piano for before I wrote the vocals.
Oh.
So that song I wrote when I was coming out of a very low place. It was one of the lowest places I've ever been. As I told you, my relationship didn't work out. It was 5 years long and I'd gotten cheated on. And then I was sexually assaulted right after that. And finally, I started to come out of that really deep hole that I was in. It was a really hard time for a few months. And it was had a lot to do with the fact that I met my partner that I referred to earlier, Brian, who had gotten me the performance at LaSalle Kitchen and Tavern. And although he was everything I wanted, because of those previous experiences, my ability to trust was so low and I was so scared. And so I just felt so happy and optimistic for the possibility of what was to come, but also so scared and fearful and lacking that ability to trust.
Right.
That my fingers just started playing something. And then after I played it a few times, I wrote the lyrics over it, which is basically about someone that you're really falling for that's perfect in all these ways for you. No one's perfect, but for me, he was perfect for me. And just being so scared to trust it.
I know we have to bravely take those leaps of faith, and it takes a lot of courage.
Yes. Yes. And even just talking about where I was in that point was a big leap of faith for me because I don't talk about it super openly why I was in such a low point. So
you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. It's I know it's hard to do, but it is. It's so important, not only for yourself, but for other people to know that there are paths out, and so many times arts can be that path.
I agree. Being able to process my feelings through music has really saved me so many times.
Well, I think it'd be a good moment to take a listen to that. This is Molly Abraham's I'm Not Ready.
Please let this all go wrong. I cannot take this song. Playing my strings perfectly. Please let this end tragically. Falling too fast. This couldn't really last. I'm not ready to feel this way. I'm not ready to trust today. Show me something that will make this end. Tell me you wanna be friends. Break me before this love is too strong. Prove that I'm not what you need. Then maybe I'll be free. Break me before too long. 'Cause I'm not ready to fall in love again. A connection I didn't see coming. If I had, I would left running. Snuck up on me and I couldn't protect the pieces of my heart that I left. Didn't know people like you exist. Everything I can't resist. Make this easy on me, please. Give me a reason that will make me leave. Show me something that will make this end. Tell me you wanna be friends. Break me before this love is too strong. Prove that I'm not what you need. Then maybe I'd be freed. Break me before too long. 'Cause I'm not ready to fall. Too long, 'cause I'm not ready to fall in love again.
And that was Molly Abraham, I'm Not Ready, an original tune by her. She told us a story about that. Yeah, now, do you have some other music that you've done? And we don't have time to feature it, but you know, tell us a little bit about some of the other things you have.
Sure. So one of the songs that I wrote is called Small School Beat. It is probably the first song I ever wrote, and it's just about how I view myself. And it was just a fun song for me because there's a lot to get out, so it almost sounds like a rap. And it's kind of my baby, and I like the song a lot, and I've made changes to it since writing it, actually pretty recently within this year, just kind of added a little bit in to space things out a little bit, because it ends up being a real mouthful. I'm kind of just going on in the song like, which is it's perfect for me, because that's how I normally talk anyway.
Do you feel comfortable giving us a little sample?
I'd love to. Yeah. I live by the beat in my heart, and it's an irregular one. In my heart, it's not one whole. It's infinity. There's so much love behold. If there was unlimited love for my son, I swear I would levitate right off the ground, because warm love lies and cold love sinks. And maybe that's the problem with me, I think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sounded great, actually.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and it even gets a little bit more rappy towards then. I don't rap at all. I am not a good rapper. But as long as there's a melody for me to sing to, I can sing words somewhat fast.
So do you have a CD or?
No, unfortunately, I don't have anything out like that yet. I was working with a friend in July on coming up with something. It got to a bit of a halt somewhat because of my school year starting. So it's a funny story about the MP3 that I am having, that I've had you play on the air. I talked to my friend Colton and I was like, hey man, like I know it's Saturday, but I really need an MP3 of an original by tomorrow night. Do you think that maybe we could just throw something together in the one bedroom apartment of that you live in? And he was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So we threw some blankets up and just got to work. The blankets are the soundproof, the place, you know. And we did our best to make it sound like a real studio. And we just pretty much knocked that out in 2 hours. I had one take on the keys and one take on the vocals, and that was all we needed. And then he did the magic, and bada boom, bada bing, there's an MP3. So
exciting.
In the future, I would like to record my originals and have an album or a CD and maybe even something on Spotify. But right now, it's just
you've got a recording studio right there in South Bend.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. I'm going to look into that. I know one of my friends also has one, so I got to figure something out with that. But going back to some of the other songs that I've wrote, I have a song called Just Drive Slow. I wrote that about two friends, actually. It started out to be about one friend, but then I had a similar situation in a friendship where they were just not doing things well with their lives. And it's just about how hard it is to watch your friend make really poor choices with drugs, mostly, yeah. Honestly. That's what they had in common. So how hard it is to sit back from a distance and just watch your friend ruin their lives. Mm. And then I have a song that's a little more lighthearted, thankfully. It's called Where Is the Fun? And it's about just sitting somewhere trying to get things done, but not being able to really concentrate in the way that you'd like. And then you're just wondering, like, why am I not having more fun here? The End of Time, which I wrote about love lasting or not lasting. And there's a couple more, but that's the gist of the ones I really like.
It sounds like right there you have an album with the number of them that you talked about. I mean, you can start putting that together and make that your debut album. And, you know, in the technology today, you can set up, without too much of an investment, a fairly decent recording situation in, you know, a small room or anything like that, as long as you have, you know, relatively quiet and a good microphone, you know.
Yes.
And
that was something I think I remembered you mentioning while you were interviewing the Rascals. And you were talking about that debate between the difference between a real studio and that apartment right. studio. And it does make a big difference. But for what I need right now, of course, I could just do what I did, throw some blankets up, get a good microphone, and bada boom, bada bing, I got an album.
Well, and you know, you can get soundproofing that's actually relatively inexpensive, and you can create an area like that. You can do your vocals with one of these vocal boxes. Like, you know, you put it in there and get the mic in there, and you can sing into that, and it deadens all the sound around everything. So,
yeah, it might be a little better than blankets, huh?
Well, yeah, and the trick with any microphone, I ran a small recording studio years ago, is the closer you are to the mic, the better, you know, you don't get all the room noise. So, you know, you don't have to worry about that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Hockey's still part of your life?
Hockey is still part of my life. I play hockey a lot at the Icebox. I play A-League when I can, some B-League. That's pretty much where I play. I am the only female that is playing consistently on a team in A-League. And in B-League, there's like 5 other girls that are really fun, great gals. The hockey community over at the Icebox is great, and I love the adult leagues, but it's a mixed league, and in the higher divisions it's pretty much all guys.
Right. Did you play like with guys girls hockey?
So yes, right now I'm playing girls with girls and guys. Okay. When I played in high school, I played on some all girls teams. I played on Honey Baked, Little Caesars, Belt Tire, and then when I went to college, of course I played all girls. But then when I was in high school, I played with mostly guys, and they used to call me the enforcer, unironically.
Well, you know, we're coming to our final minute here, Molly, and we want to give you a chance to talk about what upcoming shows you've had or any past shows real quickly.
Sure. So when you guys saw my performance, that was with Marco at an art gallery, and that was very cool. And then coming up in November, I have a performance on the 1st, which is at Kankakee South Bend. I have a performance on the 1st at Kankakee South Bend from 6 to 9. I have a performance on November 2nd at LaSalle Kitchen and Tavern. And I also have a performance on November 4th at Brass Elk Brewing from 6 to 9.
And how can people find you online?
I am available online at Molly Abraham Music on Facebook. And that's where I post all of my events too.
Well, thank you for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your musical and math and hockey journey. And I appreciate that. And good luck with your career in both music and math. And maybe sometime it'll be just music.
Thank you for being so open and vulnerable with telling us everything that you shared. So thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.